Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Mama Talk Radio, brought to you by the Conference Forum. I'm Valerie Bowling, producer of the program, and I'm delighted to bring you Clinical Air, episode number 4. Our host is Craig Lipset, head of clinical innovation R&D at Pfizer. I'm going to pass over the mic to Craig and let him tell you about today's show on the clinical innovation continuum and who our guests are. So Craig, hello and welcome.
Thank you as always, Val. This is Craig Lipset. By day, I do work at Pfizer, but the opinions that we'll be talking about and sharing do reflect those of the speaker. And Val, thanks for getting such a great fourth episode together. If folks are listening for the first time, there are some other great episodes that are available to you online at Blog Talk Radio, at the Conference Forum site, at Stitcher, at iTunes. You can listen in all sorts of ways and places. I end up listening to these things on my painful commute in and out of Manhattan. Hopefully you can listen in a much more pleasant setting. We've had a lot of really interesting people talking about some really cool things that they're doing to impact the clinical trial space. Folks like Andreas Koster from J&J, Joe Kim from Shire, Hugo Stevenson, Glenn DeVries, Randy Spaulding, and more. So hopefully you'll get a chance to listen to those, and you will add today's show to that list of your 4 favorites. So today's show, the fourth airing, is titled Clinical Innovation Continuum. And our first guest on today is a personal favorite, somebody I've enjoyed working with in a number of industry collaborations, but also at that annual DPHARM meeting where he joined us as a co-chair this year, Jeff Kasher from Lilly. Welcome aboard.
Thanks, Craig. Great to be here.
So, Jeff, you in the past had a pretty cool title, Chief Operating Officer for R&D, but you recently shook that title up. What do you look after now at Lilly?
I've got responsibility for our clinical trial materials, our clinical operations and project management, and our clinical transformational efforts. So I like it because I have one foot in delivering the portfolio and the other foot in trying to help invent the future.
Clinical transformation initiatives. I like the sound of that. That sounds like a fun area to own over there at Lilly. What's in the portfolio around transformation that you're particularly excited about right now?
You know, our focus really is about the patient and patient centricity. And I think as we've talked and we talk across the industry and with sites, we're seeing more and more of a realization that it is about the patient. And if you put the patient lens in front of everything you're looking at, you come up with some really solid answers and solutions. So we're doing things that come to top of mind. We're looking to get patient input into our protocol designs and our informed consent designs. So we recently just closed out something on Challenge Post where we put an actual Lilly protocol out there and said, okay, it's kind of clunky. Redesign the informed consent and the protocol from a patient-centric point of view. And we had many, many, many responses. We have an external board that is going through and will award a financial prize to the winner. But I think most importantly, we're going to take what we get and we're going to use that to redesign our protocol designs as well as our informed consent designs. I think some other things that are really exciting that we're working on are getting to electronic informed consent so we have something that really is helpful to a patient, working on some mobile applications. Just like you can go find a restaurant in any city, and it can guide you there. Why can't I get on my iPhone or my Droid and look up a clinical trial, find out about the procedures, find out where I can do it, if I enter the trial, why can't it connect right to my calendar to block off the times I need to go visit? And, oh, by the way, give me the directions on Google Map and the night before remind me what I'm going to my trial for. One last thing, which is I think maybe the coolest, and that's point-of-care labs and wearable devices. And it seems as though the wearable devices are just coming out on a daily basis. And, you know, you can get 12 lead EKGs now. You can get patches that measure blood gases. And just the ability to collect information from patients and trials real-time, larger volumes of data, so that it doesn't all have to take place at a site. And also, if we see a safety issue or an adverse event issue with a patient through these devices, we could contact them and have them come in sooner versus waiting for a visit. So a lot of focus on patient and a lot of movement towards technology to better enable how we do our business.
That's great, man. From wisdom of the crowd to e-consent and apps and sensors, I know that we're going to have Jeff Lee from Omniscience join us a little later in the show. I'm sure he's just itching when he hears some of those areas of focus. You know, I often feel folks throw around this theme of the patient because, quite honestly, who could argue with trying to do initiatives for the patient? It's like saying, you know, we'll do it for the children. Everybody will rally around the patient. But it sounds like you've put together a portfolio of really interesting ways to engage patients in new ways, keep them informed, get their insights earlier in the process. That's fantastic.
Yeah, I feel good. You hit the nail on the head. We've put together a portfolio, and we only look at projects that are going to impact the patient or the site in planning and execution, and we run it like projects. I mean, what's the hypothesis we want to test? Let's test it. We get an answer. Either we double down or we cut and move in a different direction, and I think it brings a lot of energy as well as the focus that's needed.
How do you pick and choose? There's so much that you can do that's out there. What's your approach for staying current on opportunities for prioritizing what you're seeing out there?
You know, I'll be honest with you. We've tapped in. All of us work with really smart people. And I think a big mistake in traditional pharma is, you know, the more senior people think they know everything. We got really smart, young, middle-aged, old people out there. And when you say, okay, this is what we want to work on, bring your ideas forward. And people bring their passion with their knowledge. And we have a very open forum where, you know, people leave, you know, their stripes at the door, and we'll debate things and say, okay, does this really make sense? Is it doable? Is it a proof of concept? Is it something we think we can scale up? And, you know, we'll get all these people who are really passionate and knowledgeable about what they're working on, and we say, okay, we come up with a portfolio. We've got a certain amount of money and resources. It's pretty good, and we want to have some, you know, some long shots and some sure things. So it's really, really exciting. I mean, just to see the passion that people bring to this is just so cool.
And I think you hit on such a great theme there in terms of, you know, managing a portfolio, just like you would manage a portfolio for your own finances at home. You want diversity. You want some near-term lower risk. You want some longer-term higher risk. It's easy to fall really square into short-term quick wins, but it's great if you can balance that out and really mix a diverse portfolio.
I agree completely with you. It is hard, and you have to be disciplined. The other thing is there's a huge gravitational pull towards the current way of doing business. And you get so many people who say, well, if we could just improve this or improve that, and it's like, no. I want to leave what we have the way it is, and I don't want to be encumbered by that. What's a better way to do it? And it's hard for everybody can't get their head around that. That's why you need to let people who can get their head around on it get engaged and work on it.
Well, you know, I think that's a great opportunity to pivot and talk about one particular program, experiment, project at Lilly, and we'll bring on the line Rick Sachs, who I had the pleasure of first meeting, not at this year, but at last year's DPharm. Rick is at Quintiles now, but is known around the industry, right, Rick? You've floated around with a number of big pharma before your current role.
Yeah, that's right. I was at Merck for 10 years and AstraZeneca for 10 years.
Oh. Well, I guess that's not really floating around if you were a decade at each of those companies.
Diverse experiences over time, Craig.
Rick, tell us about your current role at Quintiles. What are you looking after at Q?
So at Quintiles, I had a group called Clinical Design and Reporting Services, which is probably best described as the bookends of Quintiles' core trial execution business, which is what, you know, Quintiles is really known for. But I have in my sphere biostats, medical writing, safety and regulatory, which is really kind of upfront design, protocol writing and statistical design, and then back in reporting clinical study reports all the way out through integrated submissions, common technical documents, and regulatory dossier maintenance, safety spanning the gamut from upfront design certainly out to safety reporting, aggregate reporting, PSURs, PBRs, and things like that. But probably the most interesting group is a new group at Quintiles called the Center for Integrated Drug Development, which really focuses on providing services around design and a very interesting tool that was developed collaboratively with Lilly. Then it was known as Semiel here at Quintiles under the branding of our technology platform. We call it Infosario Design because it's part of the technology platform that focuses on design. And this is something that Jeff has been working on for years, and now it's come into Quintiles as a real innovative and novel design tool.
You know, Rick, when I hear the scope of your role from design through reporting and submissions, I have to wonder what everybody else at Quintiles is doing. I mean, it sounds like you've got a lot that you're looking after there, but certainly a great opportunity to look at ways to use data in really interesting ways to better power that design and straight through the continuum. So, what was the problem that, or maybe I should turn this over to Jeff. What was the problem that Lilly was trying to solve when you looked at this space and started to consider something like Semio or Infosario?
Yeah, it was really simple. If you thought about how bridges were built, a group of engineers would go into a room or a studio and they would put something on a board, a CAD-CAM system, if you will, and then they would design a structure and they could simulate, they could stress test it. Is it going to work? Is it going to collapse? How expensive is it going to be? And when it came to doing clinical research, we just, you know, sort of put our thumb up in the air, started with a clean sheet of paper. We didn't use all the data we had to inform the design of our trials. So, you know, we had some discussions. I remember, you know, Ron Wooten, John Ratliff, even Dennis Gillings, and we said, okay, let's, you know, Quintiles had a similar thought process. Let's bring some resources together and let's do this. And, you know, quite honestly, it was a three-year endeavor. We had upwards of 50 total people working on it. We each put, you know, some money in a hat and split the cost. And we both learned a lot. And I think we came up with a really good product. I mean, Lilly uses it as mainstream to all our business. And we've got some very impressive metrics that say, yeah, this thing works. And, you know, Rick and Quintiles, I think, have a fabulous tool and set of tools that, you know, they now work with other companies across the industry. So it's cool.
So Rick, Quintiles is a big company. What types of resources were you able to bring to bear on this challenge? What types of diversity could you bring? I guess where I'm going is, what made Quintiles a good partner versus just a tech shop or somebody else in this space?
Yeah, so I wasn't here at Quintiles when the ideas for this tool were born back in 2007, 2008. But what I think Quintiles brought to the party was some of their IT expertise. Quintiles is very strong in understanding the information technology as it relates to the pharma space, and I think would say in particular our CIO, Richard Thomas, has a very strong vision about how technology can really enable delivery of clinical programs and trials in a much more robust way, very much on the execution level, but as Jeff's just spoken about, even back into the design space. Plus, we also had, I think most of the subject matter expertise really came from Lilly, but some we also contributed some subject matter expertise, especially as it related to clinical trial operations, which is Quintile's forte. But I would say in the later years, as the tool matured, our interests of moving the tool beyond just trial execution design, really up to programmatic execution design, planning of clinical development plans, understanding how the clinical development plan process interacted with the study design process, and even back approaching towards TPPs and market landscapes using electronic healthcare records. That represents the more mature stages of the tool, which has been the last year of development that we've done together with Lilly.
So Jeff, change is hard, and it's one thing to come out with a great new tool, but how have you seen your study teams actually embrace and use that tool? How have you been able to help people to actually pick it up off the shelf and make it a part of how they're doing their business? Or at this stage, is it still a little more experimental?
No, Craig. It's mainstream today. Your point's a good one, and you can talk about this in the context of any change. Early days, we said, okay, a couple things. I don't want to go to a team that's at the bottom of the portfolio. I want to go on Broadway, okay? So we'll get the focus. And we did. We found one team leader who was enlightened and was willing to work with us, knowing that, okay, we still didn't have a perfectly finished product. And they got value out of it. And then we got another team, and they got value out of it. And, people by nature are competitive, and when they see when someone is working with something and it's good, they want it. So it quickly switched from, okay, we're trying to sell something. As people got experience, success, and the functionality continued to grow, to all of a sudden, teams were knocking down our door, and we had to expand the internal capability, the number of people we had working on this to support the teams.
And Craig, the nice thing about this is that at the time that the investments were made, Jeff and the Quintiles team set some hard goals of very concrete deliverables. It was actually a very well-designed business case for this tool, and set out some goals as to what the tool would actually be able to accomplish to provide concrete metrics. And Jeff now has some very clear metrics as some of the things that we've seen so far with the tool in the Lilly teams who have used it.
I often joke internally that, my card says innovation, but it's about change management, because we can come out with all sorts of great tools and approaches, but if we can't instantiate it in how we do business, if we can't mainstream it, if we can't make it accessible and value add to how we're doing business, it's pointless. Innovation to me is about getting value out of these ideas, and if you can't get that opportunity there, you're never going to get that value. So it's great to hear about this really becoming, mainstream at Lilly. Rick, is it a tool that's used within Quintiles when they're considering new studies, or is it more of a service that you make available externally?
We use it for Quintiles projects, but primarily where we focused is a little bit more upstream. So one of Quintiles' core businesses is around feasibility and identification sites and doing enrollment projections, and we use it a little bit for that. But our engagements with some of our customers have been even more upstream. We've had engagements where we've looked at looking in the oncology space at up to 14 different indications and helping customers identify which would be the indications most likely to achieve regulatory and commercial probability of success and building clinical development plans around that. We've had customers where we've done entire phase 3 development plans for programs in a very compressed amount of time. So we've been using this more on the programmatic clinical development plan to protocol space, and that's really quite novel for many of our customers, and a very different approach. Probably the most dramatic effect we've seen is that because the process is data-driven and because it is very structured in its approach, the timeline for teams to make decisions and to visualize their different options is markedly compressed, and that's been a fairly striking metric that we've seen even on the programmatic level.
You know, let's just pivot for a minute. You know, Rick, I had the chance to first meet you at the DFARM meeting, and we just had that meeting take place a couple of weeks ago. I'm curious, what were any takeaways for you at that forum this year? Was there anything that was kind of stand out or remarkable?
Oh, I think the whole meeting is remarkable. Just the ability to, you know, how you and Val and Jeff and Andreas put together a meeting to really showcase innovative thinking and innovative approaches to trial and program design. I think it's as much about the environment and the ability to exchange ideas. Jeff spoke quite eloquently a few minutes ago about getting talent to put their minds to solving problems, and the meeting really showcased that.
Jeff, how about from your perspective? Any other key takeaways from DFARM this year?
Two takeaways for me. One, people are actually moving beyond talking, and we're seeing transformational activities being put into practice. That was one. And then two, I'll tell you, my eyes opened up a little wider to just how rapidly mobile wearable devices are taking off and how they really are going to be game changers sooner rather than later.
That's a great segue to bringing in our next guest, Jeff Lee from down in the D.C. area. Jeff has also been a deep one for a few years, but he's been around this space for a few years as well. Coming into the world of clinical research via mobile, right, Jeff? You were something of an outsider to the clinical research world when you came in.
That's right. Yeah, I've been in this market area for about 3 years, and prior to that, I was about a decade in the mobile technology business, working on all kinds of colorful projects, things like American Idol or presidential campaigns, and the whole concept of patient centricity speaks to me because it's not different than having a very consumer-focused experience. It's just understanding what the patient...
I'm afraid we might have just lost Jeff. But Jeff Casher, do I still have you there?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Okay, let's give Jeff Lee another minute. Hopefully his connection is going to improve. I know he was struggling for a good connection there. Let's go back to talking a bit about some of your work, the portfolio, because one thing I love to ask people is not only what are you excited about that your team is working on today, but what are you a little envious of? Are you seeing anything out there that other groups, other companies are doing that you're saying, and you don't have to be too specific about those groups, but is there something else you're seeing out there that you're thinking, wow, that's cool, I can't wait to put that into living?
There are a lot of different things. And it is kind of fun, you know, as we go to different meetings and have different discussions and talk to, you know, colleagues about what they're trying. Like when I saw you know, Pfizer came out with Blue Button, I was like, damn, why aren't we doing that? How do we get into Blue Button? Some of the things that BMS and J&J are doing in terms of putting barcodes on their investigational products versus the labels. It's like, okay, how do we start playing in that space? So there are some, I think it's good because we kind of are feeding off each other, and with a focus on patients and how we transform. I think the other thing which has been really exciting is you know, the forum that Transcelerate provides for us to come together and either work on projects in the context of Transcelerate or, I mean, there are several cases where two or three companies now will come together and say, let's work on that.
I think
Jeff Lee just was able to call back in.
Oh, thanks, Al. Jeff Lee, are you there?
I am, and shame on me. I used a mobile device. Or sorry, I used Skype instead of a mobile device. I would have been better off on my mobile phone.
No problem at all. Jeff,
it's good timing.
Jeff Lee, so you came in from outside of clinical research just a couple of years ago. Clinical research has its challenges, but we haven't scared you away yet, have we? You're sticking around here?
Yeah, I really like this market area, and as a mobile technologist interested in the overall health arena, there's a really overlooked opportunity to use the life sciences field as a way to show the value of these technologies when you're trying to roll out mobile health programs that are supported by a payer or, you know, overseen directly by a regulator. You can see all kinds of challenges and delays, but there's a real thirst in this market area to utilize solutions that help us engage our patients better, collect information more effectively, and overall speed the trial.
Well, I love to hear you say that because, you know, I spend some time at Blueprint Health. I try to work with startups and innovators in the space and help them to see clinical research as a land of opportunity rather than an area of perceived barriers to entry because of regulation or ambiguity or compliance requirements. What are some of the growth areas that you're sensing around mobile and clinical research right now? Is it hopefully getting beyond just legacy ePro? Are we seeing a next generation of tools and platforms that people are embracing?
Well, I'm impressed that wearable sensors and passively collected data have showed up a couple of times in this conversation and in previous clinical AIR sessions. And I do think that there's more attention to that. Craig, gosh, you were one of the first people I talked to when I entered this market area back in 2010. In fact, I told Valerie that I reached out to you after hearing you on a similar radio-style broadcast and could sense that you were sympathetic to these technology areas. But back in 2010, when I tried to socialize the opportunity to collect information that was free of patient bias and recall issues and false positives and was in real time, it seemed like a much more of a space-age concept. While I don't really know I see a lot of people doing it right away, I think the market is much more open to it. And so we're one big step closer to seeing people incorporate sensors into the way we collect information from study subjects.
Well, you know, I feel like similar to what we were talking about with Jeff Kasher, you can envision a portfolio approach. In the near term, I imagine there are revenue opportunities closer to conventional ePro where there is a market and where there are newer ways to think about approaching ePro using mobile and using that as a foundation perhaps to be able to then stretch into these new areas of sensors or other types of applications to really enhance patient engagement, patient centricity. Is that a fair read, or do you have a different sense of how to grow the space?
I agree, and I think we're seeing the early signs of people trying to get their head around these opportunities. So I'll give you two quick examples. The Critical Path ePro Consortium is trying to really understand what it means to do a bring-your-own-device model to ePro, to traditional ePro, and let the patient use their own mobile phone, whatever type of device that is. That's a tremendous opportunity, but it also has some significant question marks associated with it, since you could have many different people with many different devices. But people are trying to understand that. And then there's a similar example at a CRO partner of ours where they're trying to compare passively collected information, which ostensibly is accurate and free of bias, to the patient-reported information that we would get in a traditional way and see how cognizant patients are of their own health reality. We should find that when you're collecting information passively from someone, you're actually getting better information. Forget about the fact that it's in real time and you can use it immediately for safety purposes, as Jeff mentioned. It should actually be even more accurate.
That's great. You know, I love these conversations, and the only thing I hate about it is the clock. And unfortunately, that's going to have to be the end of our of our time today, but another great open conversation. Thank you so much, Jeff Kasher, Rick Sachs, Jeff Lee. A great episode. Thank you, Val, for pulling together such a phenomenal group, and we'll look forward to carrying on the conversation at the next installment. Thanks so much.
Thank you, everybody.